Hey, if you operate a DSP and you're listening to this on or before October 1st of 2023, please visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org to complete the Craft Spirits Data Project survey. The results from this annual study help us share your success and struggles with members of Congress, the media, financial institutions, and more. But we can't do it without your help. Whether or not you're a member of ACSA, just for completing the survey, you'll receive a discount to our next Distillers Convention and Vendor Trade Show this coming February in Denver. So please visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org to complete the survey now. Thanks.
And Cowboy Bourbon got picked up, you know, nationally by news, and it won a ton of awards. And it, in my opinion, Cowboy Bourbon put Garrison Brothers, put Texas bourbon on the map. And, you know, that's a big statement, but I truly believe that.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by Donis Todd, the master distiller for Garrison Brothers Distillery in High, Texas. With Donis leading bourbon production and hand-selecting each barrel, Garrison Brothers has earned over 400 awards from around the world for its bourbon. That includes the distillery's vaunted Cowboy Bourbon, an annual release that comes from Donis and founder Dan Garrison's favorite barrels. Garrison Brothers will release this year's 140.9 proof expression this Saturday at a special event at the distillery. In this episode, Donis discusses the latest release of Cowboy, how his grandfather got him excited about distilling, seeking out local spirits while on deployments in the Air Force, his earliest memories of Garrison Brothers, and much more. To start, I asked Donis to recall the first batch of Cowboy.
The first release of Cowboy was 604 bottles. And it was back in 2013. So, and it was a very small bottle. It was a 375 milliliter bottle, and there wasn't very many of them. And how it came about is Dan Garrison, and our founder, is a big cask strength bourbon lover, and as I was working on our small batch bourbon, which is where I just taste through the inventory, and it's a vintage strategy, and I'm always looking for the next 50 or 55 barrels to marry together to support, you know, that whatever year I'm in and working on small batch to keep that small batch consistent throughout a year. But with it being vintage, it changes from year to year. There'll be subtle differences. So as I was working on that, I started to come across barrels that I labeled as piggy bank. John, I don't know if you remember or not, or maybe this wasn't what you did as a little kid. But as a little kid, I wanted everything, and you know, obviously my parents couldn't buy me everything, and from time to time, I'd get a little upset when they would tell me no, and I'd storm into my bedroom, and I'd grab my piggy bank, and I would shake it because I thought I could figure out how much money I had or didn't have, and could I get what I wanted, right. And I mean, I haven't really ever grown up. Anybody that knows me knows that, so that's not a big news flash there, and I come across barrels that are almost completely empty, and I think I can figure out how much I have left in there just by shaking the barrel and listening to the slosh. So right. I just identify those as my piggy banks, the ones that are almost completely empty, and I don't taste them right then and there. So when I come across a piggy bank, and way back on that very first go around, I quickly realized that you know, it may be a stretch of the word, but they do pay me to do this, so it is my job. And so it was my job to find those next 50, to find those next 50. And if I tasted a piggy bank right then and there, all of the flavor, it's just so intense. It's like licking a Kool-Aid packet. And if you've ever done that, you know exactly what I mean. And so I don't taste the piggy banks when I find them. I kick all those off to the side. And then I set time aside and taste through those piggy banks. And that's how the first cowboy came, you know, came around. Dan Garrison loves cask strength bourbon. I had all these piggy banks that would just blow my palate out if I tasted them when I was looking for the next 50 to support our beautiful small batch bourbon. And I said, hey, you know, Dan loves these high proof cask strength bourbons that people put out. I have all these piggy banks. Let's marry through these, get to know it, put it together, and let's do a uncut, unfiltered Garrison Brothers expression. And that's kind of how Cowboy started out. And the first time was back in 2013, and it was 604 beautiful bottles.
What do you remember of the reception of that first release? And what's it been like to see, you know, kind of become this gigantic thing? You all have, you know, an event at the distillery. I think your next one is for this release is coming up on September 23rd. Just what's it been like to watch that become such an event?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel that Cowboy put Garrison Brothers on the map. And what I mean by that was, our very first bourbon we ever sold was on Texas Independence Day, March 2nd of 2010. But we'd been up here, you know, since 07, getting it dialed in. So we weren't new to making bourbon or aging bourbon. We just hadn't released any. And when Cowboy came around, we had only been selling bourbon for 3 years. And there were still a lot of people that didn't know bourbon could be made in Texas, didn't even know we existed. And Cowboy bourbon got picked up, you know, nationally by news, and it won a ton of awards. And it, in my opinion, Cowboy bourbon put Garrison Brothers, put Texas bourbon on the map. And you know, that's a big statement, but I truly believe that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fair statement too. You know, moving on to this year's release. So it's nearly 141 proof. Is that the highest proof release that you've done of Cowboy?
It is. Yes, sir. Without a doubt. So this is the ninth time, the 2023 Cowboy that will be releasing, Garrison Brothers Cowboy Bourbon in a couple of weekends here, September 23rd, we'll be releasing it. And this is the ninth time that I've put it together for Dan and Charlie. And it's the first time that, you know, it's a hazmat. It's up over 140. It's 140.9. And it is the first of none of the past eight. This is the first time that I've broke that 140 barrier. I've had some 137s and, you know, I've had some high proofers, but never a hazmat.
Is that something you're thinking about actively as you're putting it together, or, you know, do you just let things kind of lead you there?
So I definitely, I let the bourbon, you know, I'm just the voice for the bourbon. I don't ever try to manipulate the bourbon, and I definitely don't go into any release wanting that liquid to accomplish what I want it to do. I just taste through the inventory. I get to know that inventory. I put the barrels together where I think it highlights the liquid, and then I let the liquid speak for itself. I don't like to tell people what it tastes like. I like people to tell me what they taste, and I don't try to manipulate the liquid. So I've never put Cowboy together as a goal to be a hazmat. I just try to put it together. What group of barrels will go together, play well together, and be the best liquid that I can put together for folks to enjoy. This one just happened to you know, to be a hazmat. you know, we, it, you know, it was not my goal. My goal was just to put the right barrels together to make the best bourbon I could, you know, with the inventory available and the beautiful place I get to make bourbon.
Yeah. And I won't ask you to tell me what you taste there, but I will say I saw where you said that the flavor overpowers the proof. And I definitely agree with that. And maybe it's because a couple of nights before I tasted my sample, I was around a campfire roasting s'mores, but I definitely get like a nice note of roasted marshmallows on the back end, and just warm cinnamon and caramel, and just like a really good feeling inside of me drinking this release. So well done.
Well, thank you, John. I truly appreciate that. And you know, it's you know, I personally believe we all taste things a little differently. I hope that everyone that tastes Garrison Brothers Texas Straight Bourbon Whiskey, they have a positive, they have a association with a positive, you know, experience. Typically, it's something from our past, and if I can give folks that, you know, a little glimpse into the past as a positive experience. Hey, you know, I get maple syrup there, and you know, my mom warmed up maple syrup on Sunday for French toast. I'm going to call that a win. Those mean so much more to me than, you know, someone telling me, oh, you know, I get a fragrance of, you know, cherry blossoms in the spring on the north side of Japan. I'm like, come on, you know, you know, that's just not what I'm trying to do here. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And I'm glad it reminded you of just being around the campfire with friends and family. That's a pretty awesome association by just having a sip of bourbon. So I'm glad that you had that experience.
Yeah, well, thanks. I will ask you though, what's if you are going to sit back with some cowboy, what's your ideal way to enjoy it? Is it around a fire with friends? Is it listening to music? Is there ice in the glass? Like, paint the scene for me of how you would like to enjoy yours.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's definitely with friends and family. I'm a firm believer, you know, that bourbon should be enjoyed in moderation. I'm sure my definition of moderation is a little different than other folks, but I do taste bourbon for a living. So that'd be the little side note there. But it's definitely, you know, I believe it should be shared with friends and family, and it's a great way, you know, to sit around and tell stories and meet new friends by, you know, sharing it. And, you know, the perfect scenario for me is sitting around with, you know, with my family and my neighbors and my coworkers and enjoying, you know, Garrison Brothers, you know, cowboy bourbon. In a safe environment, definitely neat. I don't make enough of this one to water it down. I never tell folks how to enjoy their bourbon, but at my house, it's going to be two parts cowboy, one part glass.
Gotcha. So you talk about family there, and I want to go back to your pre-distilling days. And it was your grandfather who was the first person who introduced you to distilling, right? So what are your earliest memories of distilling?
Yeah, they're pretty early on. So my mom was a custodian at my high school, and my dad was a truck driver for Ford Motor Company, and my grandfather, you know, made corn whiskey. And so what school bus do you think I got off of? Grandpa's house was a lot of fun. To be 100% honest, I fell in love with the stories that my grandfather told. And at a very young age, I realized that they were pretty much 100%, you know, made up. And I would egg them to tell the stories, and they got bigger and bigger. But I fell in love with those stories, and I wanted my own stories to tell. And, you know, the chemistry and the science and the mathematics of distillation and fermentation was intriguing, but not overwhelming. And I had this amazing storyteller that I could hang out with after school. And, you know, it definitely headed me, you know, down the path that I took to be the master distiller here at Garrison Brothers.
What kind of stories are we talking about here?
Oh, he just had whoppers, from everything about, you know, being chased and his being better than everybody and, you know, him building the best still and people wanting his still and he building other stills, just on and on, just, you know, just big whoppers from, you know, from anything and everything, nothing. He was a great storyteller. He actually was an amazing craftsman. He owned a tool and die shop and was a unbelievable, you know, could MIG and TIG and weld. And he was a true artist. I learned a ton from him.
And where was that? Where were you growing up?
I grew up in Ohio. I'm like okay. The bumper sticker. I got here to Texas as fast as I could.
But before that, you were in the Air Force. And so what all did you thank you for your service, first of all. What all did you do in the Air Force? And then I also remember that you were kind of still, you would go somewhere abroad and you would go check out, you know, how they were distilling whatever it was there, right?
That's correct, John. Yep, I spent 10 years in the United States Air Force, and I had an opportunity to travel all around the United States and Japan and Korea, and some other places that weren't so pleasant. But no matter where the United States Air Force sent me, I always seeked out, a local distillery, local distillation. And, I think it's important to always to continue to learn. And the only way you're going to do that is to be around it. And I always knew that, you know, hey, I wanted to make bourbon whiskey. That was always my end goal. So no matter where the Air Force sent me, I would seek out folks who were distilling. I was blessed. I had an opportunity to be around, you know, in Korea, and learn a ton about fermentation and Japan, amazing distilleries, just truly blessed. I spent 10 years in the Air Force I matured, started a family, and really honed in on my craft.
And then you moved to Texas. And I'm wondering if the stories about, you know, you just kind of start, you hear that there's a distillery, and I might be getting this wrong, so I apologize if I am, but as I understand it, the story is you move to Texas, you hear that there's this distillery opening up near you, and you just start showing up. And I'm wondering how true is that, or is there some of your grandfather's tall tales coming through in that?
No, that's the truth, John. So, you know, it's public record when someone gets their DSP, and through the United States Air Force, I fell in love with Texans. No matter where the Air Force sent me, some places before we even had running water or a restroom, or we knew where our next meal was going to come from, I always knew where the Texans were. They'd have their flag up. And in all my travels, I never once saw the Ohio pennant being flown somewhere. And I was like, I want to be on their team. Those are so proud. I want to be on their team. And I knew that I wanted to make bourbon. And while in the Air Force, almost all training is done in Texas. So over 10 years, I actually spent quite a bit of time through different training courses and things in Texas. Like I said, you know, I'm kind of like the bumper sticker. I got here as quick as I could. So I knew that I wanted to be a distiller. I knew that I wanted to be in Texas. So I watched the DSPs. And when Lone Star LLC DSP TX006 got filed, I had some friends here in Texas and San Antonio start inquiring. And they got back and said, hey, there's this guy named Dan Garrison. He bought the old Pitts Ranch in High, Texas. And supposedly they're saying he's going to make bourbon whiskey. And I literally sold everything but my Harley, and we proceeded to move to Stonewall, Texas, about 7 miles outside of High, Texas, where Garrison Brothers Distillery is located. And I showed up on Dan Garrison's doorstep, and I told him who I was and that I was going to make bourbon whiskey for him. He was a little overwhelmed at that moment. He was like, no, I'm just getting started working on my recipe, and I don't have any money. And I was like, well, you seem like a smart guy. You'll figure it out. And I just kept showing up every day. So I helped him, 6 months or so. And then we finally worked out some details, and I went to work for him for full time. And in December, that will be 17 years ago. I think I'm truly blessed. I get to do exactly what I want to do with some amazing people in a beautiful, beautiful part of Texas. I guess it depends on who tells the story. Dan may say I tricked him. I think I convinced him, but now we're back to that storytelling. So.
Well, what did you know of him before you showed up there? And, at what point did you really know that you wanted to be a part of it, of working with him?
I absolutely knew nothing about him other than his first name and last name, and that he legally, by the state of Texas, was allowed to own a still, and that if rumors were true, he was going to make bourbon whiskey. That was the only thing I knew. But I had confidence in my skill set and my work ethic, and I was not going to take no for an answer. But I didn't know anything about him other than his name, and he was legally allowed by the state of Texas and the TTB to own a still. So, and that he was going to make bourbon. Nothing about any, not talking bad about any other spirits, but as bourbon's a distinct product of the United States of America, and that means something to me. And I wanted to be a part of that awesome American heritage of making bourbon whiskey.
At the time, if I'm remembering right, the idea of like awesome bourbon coming from Texas, some people were like, you can't do that. Did you ever have any doubts about that yourself? Obviously now we cowboy is kind of proof. All of your spirits are proof of it. But at the time, was there any hesitation on your part about making incredible bourbon in Texas?
Every day you may question a decision you made, or you may look at a past decision and say, man, I could have did this or could have did that, and the outcome would have been different or better or worse. So I'll never say that I didn't have any doubts or any questions. But I gave Dan, I gave Dan my word that I would stick with him through thick and thin. I realized that it was day one. We hadn't laid down a single barrel, but the expectations that we set on ourselves was not to just make bourbon whiskey, not to just make Texas straight bourbon whiskey, but to make the best damn bourbon that we could make in the environment we choose to make it, the ingredients that's locally available to us, and the people we're blessed to make it with. We didn't want to just make bourbon. We wanted to make the best damn bourbon. And that's what we set out to do. And we knew that there'd be hurdles along the way. But I gave my word that I'd stick with him through thick and thin. We've learned a lot together, and we continue to learn. But I never doubted. That we wouldn't achieve the end goal, and we're going to continue to do exactly that.
When I interviewed Dan for this podcast a few years ago, he said that, in his opinion, you are the best bourbon maker in America. But when you started there, obviously, bourbon had been on your mind, you had been studying, but you hadn't done it professionally, right? So what kind of education did you get along the way? Were there any other trips or connections that you made you know, once you got to Garrison Brothers that were really formative for you?
Yes, many. And I feel that I have over these last 17 years that I have matured, you know, just as my bourbon has. And I've tried to be open-minded, willing to continually learn. I think it's very healthy to admit your mistakes and learn from those, own those mistakes. And I've had a ton of help. I'm surrounded by an amazing team that is here day in and day out, around the clock, making Garrison Brothers Texas Straight Bourbon Whiskey. And, you know, Dan and I get a ton of credit, but we have an amazing team around us. And along the way, I've had an opportunity to ask questions and learn from legends in the bourbon industry. Just a true, you know, an amazing experience. And I was never too shy or bashful to say, I didn't know this. How do you do this? How should I do this? How do you recommend I do this? And we had chances to rub elbows, you know, with legends throughout the bourbon industry. And so, you know, it wasn't just me. It just wasn't Dan. It wasn't just Dan and I. It was an amazing team around us and a lot of help along the way.
Another thing that I noticed looking back at that interview with Dan, he had mentioned that when things would break down back in the day, there was a point where he said, let's stop like going to consultants on things. Let's just take this thing all the way down to its screws and its bolts and figure out how it works. And he said that you were better than anyone at that you could fix any piece of equipment and that you know where the plumbing line is, you know where every electrical line is at the distillery. He said you were Mr. Fix-It Johnny on the spot. Where does that desire to break things down and do that come for you?
Yeah, I mean, I am blessed. I am mechanically inclined. I'm a big believer in understand the theory of operation, understand your pinch points, the equipment to accomplish your task, and how does that theory of operation work? And if you kind of what we say, walk the line here, if something isn't working, start from point A and get to point B and just kind of walk through that theory of operation, and that can help you figure out why it's not working. And then I've never, ever been afraid to, I mean, it's paid for. We already bought it. And the first time I want to be, you know, taking something apart isn't when it's broke. So, you know, what I did is when we first got started and we got a piece of equipment, I would, you know, most people would plug it in or hook it up and start using it. And I would take a little bit of time and take it apart, look at it, understand how it worked, and say, okay, those two things are grinding the grain. That's going to wear out. I should probably buy a couple of those. And this is what it looks like before it's all tore up. And I just applied that to running the distillery. You know, here, you know, in my world, the master distiller is so much more than just tasting the bourbon and deciding what barrels to put together and what proof to go to glass. You know, I have an amazing team that reports to me. We have a budget to follow, you know, so it's a real job, people and budgets. But I also have I have a big operation that I have to oversee and ensure that it's operational and that it's safe and that it's functioning. And, you know, when something breaks, do we have critical replacement parts? And I think that all just drives from, you know, watching my grandpa, you know, rebuild the neighbor's lawnmower and not be afraid to take it apart and put it back together and pull the rope. Does it work? If it doesn't work, you know, why didn't it work? It's not the end of the world that it didn't work. It didn't work when the guy brought it to you. So let's see if we can fix it.
That's awesome. I'm also, we've talked a lot about Cowboy to start. Are there any upcoming spirits that you're super excited about, able to talk about right now?
Oh yeah, we have all types of stuff at, you know, in barrels, and you know, we Texas wine industry has really grown, you know, over the last couple of decades, and I'm privileged to work and live around some great Texas wineries here in High. So we have different bourbon that I've aged and finishing it in all different types of Texas wine barrels. I think someday those would be fun. We have all types of versions of our Honeydew bourbon, which is a honey infused 80 proof bourbon that we sell. And I recently just did Lady Bird, where I took that cask strength Honeydew and put it in a cognac barrel for another 4 years. So I have different versions of Honeydew doing different things. You know, some may make it to glass. Obviously, not everything does, but we could go on and on. All types of stuff. We'll just let Texas go to work, and we'll taste them along the way. And if they're worthy for glass, you know, we'll do that. And if not, we'll have fun at our Christmas party.
I'm a little hesitant to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you anyways. Is Cowboy your personal favorite of your releases?
No, it is not. So the typical, I get asked a couple of things every single day. Am I a brother? And I'm like, nope, I'm way better looking than Dan and Charlie Garrison. and then I get asked, how in the world do Texans call it bourbon? So I let them know that we're not big rule followers, but we're not breaking any rules here. We're legally allowed to call it bourbon whiskey. The third one I get is, what's your favorite? And I almost always tell them the one I'll make tomorrow, and I just leave it at that. But to be 100% honest, my favorite Garrison Brothers expression, my desert island bourbon, is my small batch bourbon. I don't want a pocket knife or a fire starter or flip-flops. Just give me a case of Garrison Brothers small batch, drop me on the island, and I'll figure it out. You know, I spend every day looking for the next 50 barrels to marry together to make the next batch a small batch. We're truly blessed. Everyone's waiting, you know, for the next PO to get filled. I don't ever go and look for piggy banks or for single barrels or for barrels I should infuse with honey. But I'm always looking for the next 50. And you know, it takes me a long time to get over anything. I married my 1990 prom date. So, small batch is my favorite.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that I only asked you one of those cliche questions. but I'd like to, the last thing I'll ask you is, you know, for somebody who might be listening to this, who is kind of in like a similar position of where you were before you started at Garrison Brothers, who's wanting to get into you know, distilling as a career. They're just kind of starting to get into it as a profession. What advice do you give to that person?
Yeah, you know, I would say to be one, you got to be 100% honest with yourself. Sometimes what we think we want isn't really what we want. You know, making bourbon whiskey, is a daunting, physical task day in and day out. It's just a vicious 4-day cycle, to be honest, and milling the grains, cooking the grains, fermenting them, distill it, fill the barrel and let it age. And it just over and over and over. So you got to really, really want it. And the advice that I would give someone is make sure you want to work that hard, and be willing to admit your mistakes and continually learn from by reading, by doing, by being around, the correct people. The circle you put around you is going to be who you're going to be. I'm a firm believer in that. So if you want to be a distiller, you need to be around distillers, but they need to be good, positive people. Your circle is going to be who you will be.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Donis Todd for joining us. To learn more about Garrison Brothers, visit garrisonbros.com. And remember, if you operate a DSP, please visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org to complete the latest Craft Spirits Data Project survey. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.